This is The Guardian.
Today, we're already talking about booster vaccines, but huge numbers of people are still hesitant to take their shots. The unvaccinated people still dying from COVID, and the family and friends they leave behind. This song you're hearing is a Beatles parody called Vax Man. It's from a Nashville, Tennessee talk radio show hosted by the guy singing the song, Phil Valentine. Be thankful I don't hold you down, the song goes. Phil wasn't enthusiastic about the vaccine. His politics were pretty conservative. And on the COVID-19 pandemic, he wasn't a denier, but pretty sceptical of the government response. Phil never took the vaccine, even as the Delta variant was spreading across the US this past summer. You can probably guess where this story's going. Phil got COVID-19. He spent weeks in hospital, and in August, he died. CDC data says the vast majority of those now dying from COVID in the US are unvaccinated. Same story in the UK. Deaths like Phil's don't generate a lot of sympathy, especially on the internet. Under his Vax Man video on Facebook, people mocked his death, asking if the song would be played at his funeral. Another post says it's aged like toilet wine, whatever that is. While strangers laughed at Phil's expense, his brother Mark was mourning and preparing to carry out Phil's dying wish to spread a different vaccine message. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the people dying not to take the vaccine, and what their stories tell us about getting through to the vaccine hesitant in our own lives. Mark Valentine, you were Phil's older brother. I'd love to know, what was your relationship with him like when you were kids?
Well, we were always very, very close. He's 3 years, was 3 years younger than me. And his birthday was on the 9th of September. Mine was on the 10th of September. And we just had a very, very close relationship. He was like my best friend and an enormously wonderful guy, liked by and loved by everybody that knew him. And we just had a very close relationship.
Was he always a little bit of a showman, someone who you knew would go into the kind of work he did?
Absolutely. Phil was always, as a matter of fact, my sister wrote a letter to him on the day of his demise and just basically went through their life. He was very, very close to my younger sister because they were close in age. And Phil took a big cardboard box and cut a hole in it about the size of a television screen and went and put on a shirt and one of my dad's neckties and read the news as if he was on TV. And, you know, he would have been 6 or 7 years old. So he was always that way. He had he was a very talented musician. We grew up in Nashville, North Carolina. So there is such a place, and we refer to it as the original Nashville. So he had a little garage band called the Nashville Five to ostensibly compete with the Jackson Five, which met with limited success.
And how did Phil find his way into talk radio?
He had musical aspirations and radio aspirations early on. And so it became obvious to him that where he needed to be was in Nashville, Tennessee. So quite to the consternation of our father, who was more of a linear thinking person, and to the complete terror of our mother, he decided to load up his car and move his entire belongings to Nashville, Tennessee to seek fame and fortune.
Hey, this is Phil Valentine. Your COVID deaths in New York nursing homes were 50% higher than they were actually reported. And I wonder if that's the case here in Tennessee, too. We'll tell you about that coming up in...
What was actually his show on the radio?
Well, it was a political call-in show like a bunch of the other ones. It was on the air out here from 3 to 7, 4 hours a day. And his ratings were unbelievable in this community. I remember he told me one time that the Arbitron numbers came out and that that his listeners, that he had more listeners in this market than Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh combined.
Thank you. Come on in. And watch your step. Yeah, please wipe your feet before you come in. Thank you so much. Sir, have you been stepping in dog do? I think I smell something there. So we smell a rat today.
As his brother, was it funny to listen to him, you know, on the radio talking to so many people? Like, do you think he was playing a character, or was that the real Phil on the microphone?
It was absolutely the real Phil. And you know, I was out of, until he achieved some syndication a few years back, you know, of course I was out of range. I couldn't pick it up, but I could listen to it on the computer. And I would, you know, call into the show frequently because he and I talked about politics all the time, you know, several times a week we would be discussing whatever the political issue of the day was. And so it was absolutely the same Phil off the air as it was on the air.
Well, Mark, when the pandemic did break out, how did Phil cover it?
Well, he, I believe, covered it accurately. The Democratic Party is famous for a saying that you're probably familiar with, and that is never let a good crisis go to waste. So this was a gift. It's unbelievable that something so fortuitous could happen to a political party at the time that it happened to them.
So it'd be fair to say Phil was on the right side of the political spectrum. He spoke at Tea Party rallies.
But the people on the other side, they would love to paint the Tea Party as a racist organization.
He was a big fan of Donald Trump.
And we've talked to this gentleman many times on the phone, even long before his dad was running for president. Now we see him in person, Donald Trump Jr. Don, how are you?
I'm doing well, Phil, thank you.
Finally good to see you in the flesh.
Likewise.
Outspoken on immigration.
Because we had a bunch of illegal immigrants voting. And the way they're able to vote is because a lot of them have a driver's license. So they're
signing them
up at the driver's license places for a driver's license and to vote.
And as you might be picking up, Mark shares a lot of those views.
Well, we've had a million people come in the country, and the estimates are that 15 to 20% of them are infected with the COVID virus. Nobody knows because nobody's checking them.
I guess a lot of people listening at home, you know, might not agree with that. I mean, I certainly don't. But I guess the point here is
Look, Michael, it's not a question of whether or not you agree with it. It's the truth.
Polls in the US have shown that the people most resistant to getting vaccinated are white conservatives like Mark and Phil. And when the vaccine started to be rolled out earlier this year, they were both cautious.
We talked about it a bunch of times and, you know, like you might imagine, there are lots of things I wish I could do over. You know, Phil said, look, I'm perfectly healthy, 61-year-old guy. You know, the likelihood of me getting it is remote. He was never an anti-vax person. He never was. And you can go back and look, his remarks are well documented. He said, you know, for me, I'm going to hold off on it. I'm, you know, I'm not saying I'm never going to get it, but I'm not going to get it right now. I'm not in a high risk group, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, I'm not going to get it.
If you want to get the vaccine, I think it's a personal health decision. You got to look at your own situation and say, hey, if I get this COVID thing, do I have a chance of dying from it?
Can you take me, Mark, to that moment when Phil told you he had contracted COVID-19? I mean, was it something you guys were worried about at the beginning?
Not at the beginning. He said, you know, one of my kids went to a wedding. Five people at the wedding contracted the virus, four of which had been vaccinated. And he said, and I tested positive for it. And he said, but, you know, I'm going to be fine. And he got the Invectromycin or whatever that drug was, and he got a prescription for that. And he said, you know, I felt better. And so I didn't call him back. We didn't talk about it for like 4 days. And the next thing I know is, you know, Susan's telling me, you know, he can't even hold his head up and I'm on the way to the hospital. His situation deteriorated so rapidly that it was just incredible. And
Phil's story isn't unusual. Over the past few months, there's been a lot of cases of people who were vocally hesitant about getting the vaccine, getting the virus. In some cases, they died. Guardian journalist Shirin Kale started noticing these stories, and she wanted to know more.
For me, what was really interesting was actually trying to understand what motivated those people to reject the vaccination. And we know that the vaccine is safe and it's effective and it's free in many developed countries. And by trying to understand what motivated them to reject the vaccine, actually understand what's underpinning anti-vaccine attitudes across the world right now. Because I think we're really moving into a phase of the pandemic now where a higher proportion of the people dying are unvaccinated. And so in order to really, you know, end this terrible pandemic once and for all, we do need to understand and try and persuade people to get the vaccine. And so we need to understand what's motivating them to reject the vaccine to start with.
Well, not every one of those unvaccinated people is what we'd consider anti-vax. Can you talk us through the range of reasons that families gave you for why their loved ones didn't get the vaccine?
So what you find is that a lot of people are vaccine hesitant. So vaccine hesitant people, they may have had other vaccinations in their youth. They may have vaccines when they go on holiday, but they're just a bit uneasy about the COVID vaccine specifically. And that might be for a range of reasons. So it might be because they feel like it's been rushed out and it hasn't been tested properly. Many pregnant women or women who are hoping to get pregnant might be concerned about the impact on their fertility, or they might have seen some social media misinformation that's been shared via WhatsApp or Facebook. And so those people, they may not be anti-scientific. They may have very reasonable and valid concerns about the vaccine, which is motivating them to not get vaccinated. I would also say there's a separate group of people who think the vaccine might be a good thing, but just not for them. That actually COVID is real, but they will be okay. And they will be okay because they're young, they're healthy, they work out, they eat well, they don't drink alcohol, they don't smoke. And then, of course, moving across the spectrum, there are a significant group of people who are anti-vaxxers. And these are the people who actually it's really the hardest to try and get through to. These are people who are most likely to believe theories about Big Pharma, you know, sort of some of the sort of fruitier conspiracy theories that are out there around 5G. And these are people who really believe that the vaccine is a sort of nefarious global plot to possibly microchip all of us. They might also, I have to say, also be susceptible to some anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, which have really overlapped with the global anti-vax movement.
Okay, so who did you come across? Not on the extremist side, but perhaps more hesitant.
So I spoke to the best friend of someone called Marcus Burks, who was a musician from Leek, and he sadly died of COVID earlier this year. And his friend Matt told me about Marcus. And as he was telling me Marcus's story, I just thought to myself, gosh, I've heard this story before from other people. The story that he told me was of someone who was very active, very fit, very healthy, the sort of person who would go on a night out and just drink water all night, you know, was, you know, incredibly focused on their health. You might say eats clean, that sort of world, you know, fitness and optimal nutrition and all of those things that we associate with people who are going to the gym very regularly. And he simply felt that he was very unlikely to fall ill with COVID because he was just in such great shape. You know, he was physically really fit. He was in his 40s. He was young. And what was really interesting about his story as well was that it really echoed what I'd heard from other families, which was the sense that there was a little bit of disillusionment there with the government when it came to how the government had acted during the pandemic. So Marcus worked in the music industry. He was really sort of left out of government support, like many people in the music industry who have, you know, really out of all the industries suffered quite a lot during this pandemic.
Yeah, you bring up the point of people being a little bit disillusioned, feeling a bit alienated from government. But the thing that strikes me is lots of people feel that way, but they've still fronted up and they've gotten the vaccine. I mean, where do you think the line is where that disillusionment gets so great that something like this vaccine can be recast as part of some nefarious plot?
It's really interesting, and I think that's a really good question. And I suppose it comes down to the underlying person themselves, right? And their personality pre-COVID. So there are many of us who are really deeply unhappy with how the government's handled the pandemic, possibly me included. And yet I was first in line to get my vaccine and I'm delighted and it was brilliant. But if you're the sort of person, and there's been research on this from academics, who for example, leans very heavily to the left or very heavily to the right politically, then you might be the sort of person who is less likely to believe the government when it comes to messaging around vaccinations or COVID, because you're the sort of person who is already fairly extreme politically and you kind of like to make up your own mind about things and you're less inclined to go with the consensus view on something. There's also been evidence that suggests that people who have libertarian beliefs might be likely to, you know, reject vaccinations because they like to believe in personal liberty and personal freedom. In the US, we know that there's actually, you can really map a very clear correlation between people who are not vaccinated and vaccinated in terms of their political allegiance. So there was a poll from NBC News in August this year that found that 88% of Democrats are vaccinated and just 55% of Republicans are vaccinated.
I mean, this idea that the vaccine was rushed or is experimental is really widespread. And I wondered if you could remind us why exactly this vaccine was developed so quickly compared to what we're used to.
Manufacturing in general is a process that takes many, many years. You know, Professor Sarah Gilbert and Dr. Catherine Green of Oxford University, they wrote a book about this recently and they talked about how, you know, it used to be the case that vaccines might take 4 or 5 years to get approved. But that's because they weren't manufacturing vaccines in a global pandemic with a great degree of urgency. And the reason that we were able to get these vaccines out so quickly is not because we were rushing them through without proper safety processes. It's because the entire global scientific community was absolutely focused on trying to create a safe and effective vaccine. It is not the case that it has been rushed out and it's dangerous. That simply would not have been possible. And it's gone through all the same clinical trials that would have, any other vaccine would have gone through in history.
Mark, your brother Phil was admitted to hospital and he was there for 4 weeks. Like, that must have been such an ordeal for your family and for Phil's wife, Susan. Were you able to visit him there?
I was not able to do that. Susan, bless her heart, was in there with him 14 hours a day and in the full PPE, you know, every hour of every day that she could be in there.
And Mark, at some point in what just sounds like a horrendous experience for Phil, but and also for your whole family, Phil tried to send you a message about vaccines in particular. What did he try to tell you?
Well, that was before he went on the ventilator, and he, you know, he told Susan to tell me that that he just not only regretted not getting the vaccination, but was sorry for what he was putting everybody through. And if he had this all to do over again, he would have had a softer edge about the vaccination and would have changed his message. And, you know, until he breathed his last breath, he regretted that there may be people out there that weren't vaccinated as a result of what he said. And so there wasn't anything to be done other than to go out here and try to undo that by speaking to as many people as we can, which is what I've been doing.
Can you tell me about the day that Phil died?
Yeah. You know, I was on the phone with the intensive care unit 4 to 5 times a day. And they were telling me that, you know, we think that he's been on the ventilator too long and, you know, we're concerned that he may have experienced brain damage. And I had a very full and frank discussion with his doctor about that. And I said, you know, you don't have any way of knowing that. You can't test him for brain function with the level of sedation that he has. I'm not throwing in the towel. You know, if Phil is going to decide when this thing is over. So we fought it up until he just expired. It was, you know, it was just a, you know, a heartrending situation, as you might imagine. I mean, he's got 3 of the greatest kids you've ever seen and the most wonderful wife imaginable, and that everybody adored him. And the notion that he was, you know, gone was just hard for us to process.
Shirin, many of us took the vaccine earlier this year, largely on the back of clinical trials showing that Pfizer, AstraZeneca, others were effective. In the months since, we've gotten real-world data proving that is true. Vaccines do save lives on a huge scale. On the other hand, how much more vulnerable do we now know people are to COVID if they aren't vaccinated?
An Office for National Statistics report, which came out last month, showed that in the first 6 months of 2021, COVID was involved in 37.4% of deaths in unvaccinated people and just 0.8% of deaths in fully vaccinated people, which is a pretty staggering statistic.
0.8% of those deaths among the fully vaccinated. That is extraordinary. You said you spoke to ICU doctors about this, and we know how exhausted they've been throughout this pandemic, but it must be a really particular kind of despair to see people getting sick and dying who could have been vaccinated, who need not have died.
Absolutely. And what really emerged, actually, from speaking to ICU doctors was just this sort of sense of almost deep fatigue and hopelessness with the situation, because, you know, these are medical staff who have been working pretty much relentlessly now for the last year. And, you know, I could not tell you how many medics I've spoken to in the last year who've told me they've got PTSD from this pandemic. And then now what you're seeing is people coming in who are in their 30s and 40s. They are young and they are so desperately sick. And the knowledge that those people don't need to be there, that they could have had the vaccine and they probably wouldn't have ended up in an ICU bed, is really quite difficult. And, you know, I spoke to one ICU doctor and he told me that actually it affects the nurses the most, just because they have to spend the most time with these people, because, you know, they're really by their bedside day in, day out in ICU, you know, doing 12-hour shifts. And often the patients that they're dealing with are filled with fear and regret, you know, and that's a really, really common emotion. Sometimes they ask for the vaccine when they come in, and medics have to explain to them that unfortunately it's too late to have the vaccine now. You already have COVID. And looking someone in the eye who is desperately ill and is so young and knowing that all of this is avoidable is a really hard thing for medics to have to deal with.
From your reporting, were there people who were vaccine hesitant, who got sick with COVID, and even at that point just couldn't change their previous views?
Yes, which is kind of mind-boggling, really, to think about it. Some people are so deeply down that misinformation rabbit hole that they just can't find a way out. So I spoke with someone called Kaylee Michelle Stein. She's a 22-year-old waitress from Kansas. And Kaylee's an orphan. Both her parents, Michael and Michelle, who were both truck drivers and were both aged 53, died of COVID in August, and they were both unvaccinated. And Kaylee went to her father's bedside as he lay there dying and asked him, if you pull through this, will you get the vaccine? And he told her that he wouldn't. And it's a really amazing thing to consider, that, you know, that somebody wouldn't get vaccinated after having been so desperately ill with COVID. But he was very much in that anti-vax camp. You know, he really believed it was, I think the word he used was a sham to keep us all in fear, is the phrase that he used. So I don't think there's anything that really would have persuaded someone like that.
Shirin, I think most of us have someone in our wider circle of friends or family who are still holding back from the vaccine. I mean, I can think of at least two people in my own wider family. I mean, how do we start a conversation with them?
So I've had these conversations with my family members, and, you know, I definitely did it all wrong. Like, I was terrible at it. I got emotional, I got angry. I think I probably shouted a bit. It's really hard to have those conversations with people that you love and you care about, because you just want them to be safe. What I would do now, if I could go back in time with all the knowledge that I have and all the experts that I've been lucky enough to speak to about this, is do it very differently. And I would try, first of all, to understand that those fears are coming from an emotional place. I think there's this tendency to bludgeon people with information, you know, like, okay, I'm just going to rattle off all these figures from the CDC or from Public Health England about vaccinations, and then of course they'll understand that I'm right. But that doesn't work. And the reason that doesn't work is because those fears are coming from an emotional place. And that is something that experts really emphasize when you speak to them about this. The best thing you can try and do is try and meet that person where they are and try and understand what is motivating them to feel that way. So just really try and listen to what they're saying to you. And then from understanding those concerns that they have and how they might be coming from an emotional place, to try and build rapport and trust with them, which means no shouting. And it really means understanding their concerns and really viewing those as legitimate and valid concerns, and then trying to find some shared common ground.
I mean, all of that sounds very different from the glee, almost the schadenfreude that we see online when these cases are reported on. How damaging do you think that kind of reaction is?
It's so damaging. I don't think that's helpful at all. You need to try and understand and emphasize this community of people. You know, most of them are actually reasonable and intelligent people who have just made decisions based on bad evidence. And we've all been guilty of doing that and ourselves in the past, you know. So the best thing that we can do right now is really try and understand why people might be rejecting vaccination and really be empathetic and respectful towards those people in the hope that maybe you might be able to get through to some of them and persuade them of the benefits of this miraculous, like life-saving vaccine that has been developed by scientists and given to us as a gift, basically, in this terrible time of pandemic.
Coming up, Mark carries out Phil's last request. Mark, your brother's death became global news, and it led to some really horrible things being written about him on Facebook and Reddit and other places. Did you encounter many of those comments?
I did encounter them, and I've been asked that question a number of times. And, you know, I'm not at all surprised about those comments, because the people, and this is what is just, I think, fascinating. The people on the left would have you believe, they sell themselves as the most kind, gentle, tolerant people on earth, and let everybody live and let live and all that sort of stuff. Well, they are the most vicious people imaginable, because, you know, I'm not surprised at their outrage, but I'm not upset by it, because it's disingenuous. They are mad at Phil, not because of his position on the vaccine, but because of his position on everything else.
And Phil asked you to spread the message about his change of heart on the vaccine. Can you tell me about how you've been doing that?
I'll put it this way. I've spent more time interviewing with CNN than I ever spent watching CNN. But and I've done, you know, I've done Newsweek, I've done the Washington Post, I've done the New York Times, I've done Inside Edition and newspapers and radio stations all over the country. My goal right now is to try to affect as many people getting vaccinated as I can affect. And what's interesting is that, you know, my politics are no mystery to anybody, but everybody has a narrative. So, you know, this doesn't fit the Fox News narrative. Therefore, I hadn't been on any of the Fox News shows. It does fit the CNN narrative. So I've been on there half a dozen times. That's the politicization of this thing is what is so exceedingly unfortunate.
As you've been going out talking to people you don't agree with, I wonder, has that just been on the media, or have you been having personal one-on-one conversations with people who might not share your stance on vaccines now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, you know, a bunch of people in my neighborhood, several of which, you know, attempted to debate the decision to get the vaccine or not. You know, and I live in a very small neighborhood, maybe a couple hundred people. I've had about 8 people in my neighborhood, that some of whom I knew very well, some of them I knew tangentially, to come to me and say, I got the vaccination because of Phil.
Mark, really, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Well, I appreciate it, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for today. My thanks to Mark Valentine and Shirin Kale. You can read Shirin's piece at theguardian.com. Just search for "The Virus is Painfully Real. Vaccine-hesitant people are dying." If you haven't already, go and subscribe to Science Weekly to get their daily COP26 roundup from Glasgow. Everything you need to know about the International Summit to Avert Climate Disaster. This episode was produced by Adrian Lacey and exec'd by Elizabeth Casson. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We're back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.